Our week is swiftly passing away, and we only have two services that remain in this series of studies. And I hope you'll make your plans to come back and be with us as we continue these studies. Tomorrow night we'll be talking about The Wayward Son Comes Home, a study from Luke chapter 15. I hope you'll make your plans to be with us. We'll talk about what brought him back home. What was done to bring him back home? What contributed to his return? That'll be our study tomorrow night. And then Friday we'll be looking at Matthew the 18th chapter, and we'll be talking about, are you serious about heaven? Are you really serious about heaven? We'll look at an example of a man who looked like he was serious. Come to find out he wasn't as serious as we thought. So we'll talk about him on Friday night. I've been mentioned a couple of times that I'm from a place, as J.R. pronounced it correctly for you last evening, Shelville, Tennessee. You would pronounce that here Shelbyville, but we pronounce it Shelville, Tennessee. It is known, and what put us on the map, as the Tennessee Walking Horse. We live in the heart of horse country, as we say there. You see, before you an arena that seats 35,000 people in our little town of 20,000, it's a big arena. It's only used for horses and for horse shows, and that's what put us on the map. We're known all across the country, in fact, around the world, for the Tennessee Walking Horse. I had an occasion one time to have lunch with former President Gerald Ford. He asked me where I was from. I said, I'm from Shelville, Tennessee, home of the Tennessee Walking Horse. I'm familiar with that. The President of the United States knows all about our horses. All throughout our little county of 35,000 people, there are about 20,000 horses. More horses nearly as we have people, or nearly as many horses as we have people. So you know why we're known for the horses there. All across our county, there are many people that have show horses. That's what the town is known for, show horses. Many people own show horses, many, like myself, own trail horses. And there are many trainers and training facilities scattered throughout the county. When I say training facilities, you'll see barns that hold 100 horses each, and trainers that fill those barns, and they're training horses all over the county. Everybody in the county knows something about horses. They may not be fans of horses. We have people who tell us, I hate horses, I hate the horse industry. But like it is in Indianapolis, you know something, though you may not be a big fan, about racing if you're around Indianapolis. You know a little something. Everybody knows just a little bit about horses. There must be something that we can learn from horses because the Bible talks about horses. 40 times in the New King James translation, the term horse is used. Horses is 144 times in the New King James. Horsemen, 51 times. The Bible talks about horses, and sometimes it's a literal horse. Remember, as they came out of Egypt, Moses sang his song of victory. The song of Moses was the horse and the rider cast in the sea. That was literal. The Egyptians and their horses were cast into the sea. Sometimes it's figurative. Jesus was riding, the Christ was riding his victorious as the victor was riding on the white horse. Not in a literal, but figuratively, he's riding on a white horse. Sometimes the Bible talks about a horse by comparison. For example, in Proverbs 26 and verse 3, as the whip is for the horse, so is the rod for the fool. There's something about knowing about using a whip on horses that you learn something from that. The Bible talks in James chapter 3, we hear this quite often, talking about putting a bit in the horse's mouth and putting a bridle to bridle the tongue, just like you do with the horse, so that you can control it. In fact, the illustration is you can never trust your tongue, just like you can never truly, fully trust a horse. You say, well, this is a great horse, I can trust. But you've got to keep that bridle on and that bit in the mouth, don't you? You learn something from horses. Well, another passage in Psalm 32 and in verse 8 and 9, that man is to accept the teaching of God and don't be like an unharnessed horse. And so there is that comparison that is made. There must be something that you learn from horses. We're not coming here to talk about horses, but I want to tell you something about horses for just a moment. And we're going to come back and talk about training our children. You know that's where we're headed. And I want to suggest to you that what a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. What you see before you is the current world grand champion. This is a show horse. And that's a world grand champion. And that horse that you're looking at, the owner was offered $2.5 million and you turned it down for that horse. There's something special about that horse. can do things that other horses can't do. And I want to suggest to you what makes that horse special. It's all in the training. That's what makes it worth $2.5 million or more. Here is a Tennessee walking horse. I've had some, and two, in fact, just about like that right there. They were worth $2.5 million. And when I tell people I own the Tennessee walking horse, they say, I'd like to see one walk like those horses you see on television. And I say, you're not going to see that. You know why? Because it hadn't been trained. I couldn't afford the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. You can get horses to do anything you want them to do. You can get a horse to bow. You can get a horse to sit. In September, I watched a horse lay down. The owner put a pillow up under his head, put cover over part of the body of the horse, and the horse reaches down with its mouth and pulls the cover up and puts it around his neck like he's going to sleep. You know why I did that? It's all in this training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. And training takes a lot of time. Now, I suppose I could get my horse to bow or to sit, but you know why my horse doesn't do that? I don't want to put that much time into that. It's all in the training. What a horse is and what a horse does in the training. I don't know how many Amish you have in this area, but not far from us, or within a couple of miles of where I live, there's a large Amish community, and when you drive in the area, you see these Amish buggies going down the road. Now, Walmart and McDonald's have hitching posts for their horses, and horses have cars come by them. And so here is a horse that is not spooked by traffic. The horse will stand still while they load their buggies, and that all has to do with the training. Those are some of the best trained horses you'll find. A little closer to you, perhaps you may know more about the Kentucky Derby. And that is, you have a horse that will run a mile and a quarter track, and he wins the Kentucky Derby and worth millions and millions of dollars. You know why that horse does that? It's all in the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. You haven't understood that with horses. My horses are trail horses. You say, well, there's not many. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of training goes into trail horses. There are those who have good horses, and they're well-behaved horses, and a horse that comes when you call, and when you whistle, they come out of the field. And you have those kind of horses that behave well, and you know why they behave well and why they're good horses? It all has to do with the training. There are those horses that are problem horses. I sometimes ride with people who have problem horses, and it's an aggravation if you have a good horse, which I do, by the way. And those problem horses won't stand still for the rider. They eat along the trail. They want to take off and run with the rider. And you know why that horse behaves that way? It's all in the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. I'm amazed at people who ride with us sometimes who will leave a horse out in the field for 3 or 4 months or maybe 6 months or even a year and haven't even touched the horse or even hardly seen the horse, and they finally round him up and catch him, put a saddle on him, begin to ride, and they are frustrated why the horse is misbehaving, and they say, I don't understand what's wrong with the horse. And I look and I think what the horse is and what the horse does is all in the training. Now, I want to list some things if we learn about that. I want to suggest to you that the owner and the rider is training all the time. You may have a concept that what happens with a horse, if you don't know anything about horses, is that you train them and then you ride them and then you don't train anymore. Every time you're on the horse, you're training the horse. All the time. In fact, we train our horses by what we allow. We train our horses by what we tolerate, and we train our horses by what we do not correct. I've had riders on the trail who come by me and the horse nearly runs over my horse, or their horse runs into my horse, or their horse kicks my horse, and they say, I don't know why that horse does that. And I think, I know why. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. You trained him to do that. And you even suggested to someone, you trained, oh no, I didn't train him to do. Yes, you trained the horse to do that by what you have been allowing and what you have tolerated and what you have not corrected over a period of time. You trained the horse to misbehave. What a horse is and what a horse does is in the training. Now, I want to suggest to you, here's the point I've been driving at this whole introduction, is it's all in the training. Now, a great horse is doing what it's trained to do. The horse that has the big lick and the Tennessee walking horse, he's doing what he's been trained to do. I want to suggest to you, a bad horse is doing what he's been trained to do. Thirdly, I've learned from this illustration that training takes time and a lot of work. Sometimes it takes a lot of money. If you have a Tennessee Walking horse and you bring it to our area and you want it to be a world grand champion, you better have a lot of money with you, because it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of time to get him to be a world grand champion. This is an important point I want you to learn, and then we're going to look at some Bible passages. And that is, we train horses to do what we don't want them to do. You say, why do you do that? Well, here's a trail riding horse, and this man says, you know what, I don't understand, my horse eats along the trail and I can't get him to quit eating. You know why he's eating? It's because you've trained him to eat along the trail. No, I didn't train him to do that. Yes, you did, by allowing him to do that and not correcting it early on. You see, my horse just takes off before I get my foot over the saddle, and he takes off and I nearly fall off. You trained him to do that. I don't want him to do that, though. But you trained him to do that. How did I train him? By allowing him to do that and by correcting that. That's how you trained him to do that. So we train our horses to do things we don't want them to do, by what we allow and by what we tolerate. And with that principle in mind, you can understand that. If you know anything about horses, you can understand that. I want to talk about training children. And there are two things I want to see in our study tonight. We want to talk about training, and then I want us to talk about the difference in children. We'll come back to the second part in just a moment. Let's open our Bibles to Proverbs 22 and in verse 6, a very familiar passage to us all. There's a great parallel between training horses and training children. Not in the sense that they are parallel in all degree, but there must be something we learn from horses. As we've illustrated, the Bible talks about horses. So let's look at Proverbs 22 and in verse 6. Let's talk about the training. Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. But a marker of finger there, we're going to talk about that passage a little bit, then we're going to come back and make application there too. Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Let's divide that verse into two sections. And when the text says, train up a child in the way that he should go, that portion of the passage is talking about how to raise a child. Train him up in the way that he should go. The second part of the verse, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it, talks about what the child will be as an adult. I know the child may be 2 years old, or the child may be 3 years old, or 5 or 10, but you need to focus on what you want that child to be as an adult. What kind of child do you want him to be? But what I learned from our text is, what the child will be as an adult depends upon how you raise the child. In other words, what I want this child to be when they're 30, when they're 40, when they're 50, and when they're 60, and when they're old themselves is dependent upon how I raise that child in their youth from their birth until I turn them loose out into the world. Now, I have people with reference to horses say, you know what, I would love to have a horse that stands still. Well, I get on the horse and stand still when I tell them to stand still. You know what? If you don't want that in a horse, then you go back and you train the horse to do that. Someone says, I want a horse that will cross the creek. I get down to the creek and he just balks and he will cross the creek. If you want a horse to cross the creek, you train him to cross the creek. You have to train him to do that. Somebody says, I want a horse that doesn't kick me all the time. I've had horses that kick me. And then I trained them and they never did that again. I won't tell you what I did, but they never kicked again. One time, and that's all it took. You can stop that. You can train them not to do that. And so here's someone who says, you know what I want with a child? I'd love to have a child that behaves. You want a child to behave? You can train your child to behave. You know what Proverbs 22:6 is saying? Train a child in the way that you go when he's old enough to depart from it. I want a child that stops when I tell them to stop. And I want a child that quits when I tell them to quit. You can train the child to stop and to quit. Someone said, I'm looking down the line and I want my child, when they get to be an adult, I want them to be a child that's respectful of others. You can train them to be respectful of others. All a child is and all a child does is in the training. And it's just like it is with horses. And someone says, you know what, I want a child that when they grow up and they come to adulthood, they go to church all the time and they serve the Lord and they're faithful to the Lord and they live godly lives, then you can train them to be those kind of adults. Because what they are as an adult will depend upon their training and upon their raising. Now let's list a number of passages where the Bible tells that parents are given the responsibility to mold and to shape the children. But what the children are, again, this is a proverb, a general statement, to which there may be exceptions, But generally how the child goes and how the child is molded is dependent upon what the parents did. Train a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. Proverbs 22 and in verse 6. Let's look at another passage. Let's lay down the principle, and then we're going to come back to Proverbs 22 and in verse 6. Let's go to the book of Ephesians, if you will. In Ephesians chapter 4, beginning in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, we have the apostle laying down some instructions for the family, saying, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, may live long on the earth. Now verse 4. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and the admonition of the Lord. What am I learning? I'm learning that parents are given the responsibility to mold and to shape their children into what God would have them to be. Let's look at another passage. Let's go back again to the Old Testament, as we have several times already this week, in the book of Deuteronomy. In Deuteronomy chapter 6, on the verge of going into the land of Canaan, Moses instructed the people, this is important for you to know. You need to know and understand that you need to mold and shape your children lest they go to the world and they become idolaters. And notice beginning at verse 6 of Deuteronomy 6, he said, and these words which I command you shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk with them when you sit in the house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. Parents are given the responsibility to mold and to shape their children into being what God would have them to be. Let's back up two chapters to chapter 4 and in verse 10. We began our study on Sunday morning talking about the fear of God. Parents have the responsibility, as Moses instructed the Israel of old, to do the same. And that is to teach them that they may learn the fear of the Lord. Especially concerning them, beginning at verse 10. The day that you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children. The fear of God is something that you must learn. And then you take that which you have learned, and then you teach it to your children. And what I'm learning from this is we need to teach our children to walk in the fear of God. We'll see more about that as the lesson unfolds. Let's look at one more passage in the book of Genesis, if you will, chapter 18, and in verse 19. God said concerning Abraham that God had chosen him, verse 19, for I have known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him. What God wanted Abraham to do was command his household and his children after him. God wants you to command your household and your children after you. Now we all know that principle, but we drive home from the scriptures that parents are given the responsibility to mold and to shape their children. But I want us to go back to Proverbs chapter 22 and in verse 6. And I want us to talk about this principle of train up. The text says, train up a child in the way that he should go. The word that is translated, train up, signifies to dedicate. The same word is found in Deuteronomy 20 and in verse 5, and twice they're translated by the word dedicate. And it gives this idea the connotation of dedication. And it gives the concept of dedicating the child to God. Train up the child in the way that he should go. What do you mean by that? Dedicate the child to God, and then raise the child as God's child. Now get that picture in your mind for a moment. It's as if you took this child that has just been born, and you're presenting it to the Lord and say, Lord, I am presenting and dedicating this child to you. I've given this child to you, and I want to raise that child as your child, the way you want me to raise that child, teaching him what you want him to know, and becoming the person you want him to become. Is that how you're raising your child? Are you trying to mold and shape him into the child God wants him to be? That's the concept of train up a child. It means to dedicate. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown comment upon that concept of train up, and they say that literally it means upon the mouth of his way. Upon the mouth of his way. Meaning what? It's the idea of at the opening of his path. In other words, at the beginning. The idea of training up a child is you start when the child is impressionable and while they're pliable. You don't wait till they get to the point you can't shape and mold them anymore, but you start at the very young age and you begin to mold and shape them so that you can still shape and mold them into what they should be. Let's go back to the training of horses. You start training a horse from the time he's born if you really want to work with him.
From the time that coal hits the ground, you start putting your hands on it and molding and shaping and trying to get him to be what you want him to be. You start breaking him about 2 years old. You get a horse, you let him run wild for a number of years, and you get him up full grown by 5 years old, and you haven't hardly done anything with him, you may have a hard time molding and shaping that horse into being what you want him to be. Dr. James Dobson said a child's entire personality is developed by the age of 5. And you start beginning molding and shaping about the age of 5, you may be a little late getting started. Molding and shaping the attitude of that child into what God would have them to be. I want to suggest that children may be able to comprehend far more than we can comprehend that they are comprehending, and far more than they can ever express. And so we begin teaching them things, and they may not, you think they're not getting that. They may be gaining more than what you think. They may be grasping more than what you think. You might start early with Bible time, Bible story time, telling them Bible stories, reading the scriptures to them, instilling principles in them that you think, I don't know that they understand that. Early on with our children, we began telling them, we want you to marry someone who fears God, probably before they ever understood what the word marriage meant. We want you to marry better than just someone who is a Christian. Someone who walks in the fear of God. They comprehend more than you think. Colin Bennett suggests that this idea of train up gives the idea of affecting the taste. What is that about? It referred to the idea of putting syrup in the mouth of a sucker. To get him to learn to nurse. You get the picture and the concept? Taking syrup, putting it in his mouth, and they begin to like the taste of that, and they begin to suck, and they begin to nurse. And training the child to do something, teaching the child to do something, that then it becomes accustomed to. Training up a child in the way that you go, start them doing things that they're going to become accustomed to, like going to church, like studying their Bible, like giving of their means, though they have just a small amount, teaching them to do things to which they then become accustomed, so that they are now dedicating their own lives to the service of the Lord. That's how they're training up a child in the way that it should go. So now let's raise the question, how do we train a child? If we were talking about horses, that's not our subject tonight. It's just an illustration. There are those who have horses, they want to train, but they don't have a clue how to train a horse. They don't know where to start. They think you just take a horse, throw a sign on, and get ready to ride. Well, if that's the way you think you're going to train a horse, my friend, you better put a little padding on, because you're fixing to have a ride for sure. And there are those who think that that's the way you train children. You just kind of just, let's just turn them loose and wear on for the ride, and you're going to be in for a ride for sure with your children. How do you train a child? Well, let's begin listing some things. We train our children by instruction. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 6, 7 through 9. You say, that's Old Testament. I will understand that. We're not living under that law. I understand, but the principle is true. That under the Old Testament, if these people were to be raised according to the law of Moses, they need to be taught the law of Moses. If we're going to raise our children under the New Covenant, they need to know the same kind of principles about the New Covenant as they did about the Old. So let's go back to Deuteronomy 6, beginning at verse 7. You shall teach them diligently to your children. And when you sit in the house, talk of them when you sit in the house, and when you walk in the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. And you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and as the frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. What's he saying? He's saying, you talk about the Bible, and you talk about it often, and you talk about the Scriptures, and you talk about it often. When you lie down, and when you rise up. Constantly around you, there are occasions where you can use that as a teaching occasion. As you teach your children the Scriptures, what you need to do is tell them Bible stories. They need to be familiar with Bible stories. So as they grow up, they know the story of Adam and Eve. And they know the story of the Tower of Babel. They know the story of Noah and the flood. They know the story of getting the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai. They know something about the wilderness wandering. They know something about the divided kingdom. They know something about the united kingdom. They know something about Babylonian captivity. They know Bible stories, and they know Bible timelines. They become familiar with their Bible. But not only that, they need to be taught Bible doctrine. Sometimes we focus on teaching our young children Bible stories, but they haven't understood and learned Bible doctrine. What does the Bible teach about the New Testament church? What does it teach about authority? What does it teach about the organization of the church? What does it teach about the deity of Christ, etc.? We fail to teach them Bible doctrine. We need to teach our children the text in its context. Do you remember in 2 Peter chapter 3, beginning at verse 16, Paul said that, or Peter said that there are some things that Paul wrote wherein men twist and pervert the Scriptures, verse 16. Verse 17, he said, "Beware lest you fall from your own steadfastness." That is, if they take the text out of its context, they may lead you astray. You know what his answer was, verse 18? "But grow in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord." What does that have to do with anything? When you understand the text in its context, you understand when that false teacher is taking it out of its context. Teach your children the text in its context. Here's what this text means. Here's what it means in that context. You need to be teaching your children to live the Christian life. Teach them what Christian living is about. Not just Bible doctrine. Of what's wrong with this practice and what's wrong with that practice. And we believe this to be true. But teach them how to live the Christian life. What Christian living is about. Teach them application and not just the principle. Teach them to take the principles and make application from them. Here's what this means to us. Here's the daily situation we're in right now wherein you can make application of the lesson we learned yesterday. In Bible class or in the sermon. Here's where we put that to use. Here's where the rubber meets the road. How do you train your children? By teaching them, but we have a lot to teach. But that's not all. How do we train our children? We train them by the example that we set. Ezekiel 44, 16 in verse 44, "Like mother, like daughter," was the proverb that was uttered. It's a true proverb, isn't it? Like mother, like daughter, like father, like son. Children often turn out to be just like their parents. Children often turn out to be just like their parents. The parents are dedicated and devoted. The children turn out to be dedicated and devoted. The parents hit it about halfway. The children hit it about halfway or less. Children learn by the example you set. Children can see through any veneer. When parents put on a front, they teach the Bible principle. They take them to Bible class and take them to worship. But then the parents put on a front and a veneer. Those children have the ability. They have better vision than we think. And they can see right through that veneer. And I'm learning something here about the power of your devotion. If that means as much as the teaching itself, when they see the teaching that you're giving them and what they're hearing in the Bible classes and in the sermon, and they see that practiced in your life, they see your dedication and your devotion like mother, like daughter, like father, like son. They often turn out to be just like you trained. Now, can I tell you the number of parents that have cried? Ask me to come to talk to them in their home. Or ask the elders to come and we sit and we talk and we weep with them over their children and they're saying, "I don't understand what's happened to my children," and I'm thinking, you know what? They've turned out to be just like you trained them. Just like the fellow whose horse runs right over me and he says, "I don't know why he does that." He turned out to be just like you trained him. That's why he's doing that. That's why your horse doesn't act any better. Children turn out to be just like we train them. How do we teach our children? We teach them by what we allow and what we tolerate. That's why I spent a little time talking about the horses. That's one of the fallacies that we have in rearing and raising horses and training horses. Is we allow and we tolerate things. We turn to the book of Judges, if you will, while we're reviewing that illustration. Remember that illustration we gave just a moment ago? Of the fellow who says, "You know, I didn't train my horse. I don't want him to do this." Yeah, you trained him to do that. But what you allow, what you tolerate, and what you did not correct. And we often teach our children by what we allow and what we tolerate. And turn with me to the book of Judges chapter 14, and this is the case of Samson. Where Samson went among the Philistines, and he found a woman of Timnah, the daughter of the Philistines. And he came back in verse 2 to his father and mother and said, "I've seen a woman of Timnah, the daughter of the Philistines. Now therefore go get her for me as a wife." You know what their response was? It's what you'd expect people of God to say. And that is in verse 3. "Is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren, among all my people, that you must go and get a wife among the uncircumcised Philistines?" What you need to be doing is looking among God's people for a wife. Not going among the Philistines. They are the uncircumcised Gentiles. Have nothing to do with them. You know what they did? They went and got her. They spoke out against it. Said, "We don't like it." But they tolerated it.
I want to suggest to you that we teach our children by what we allow them to do. We're training our children. So, I taught them better. Remember the horse rider who said,
I didn't teach him to kick.
I didn't teach him to run over your horse. I didn't teach him to eat along the prairie. Yeah, you taught him. You trained him. How so? Because you allowed it. You've allowed it to go on week after week after week after week, and that's why he acts that way. You say, I didn't teach my children to do that. Oh, yeah, you did. Because you've been allowing that. We teach our children by where we allow them to go. We train our children when we don't correct them. And we may even not approve, and we may even go so far as to say, that's not right. And we say to our children, as they go out the door to go to the dance, I don't approve of this. I don't like this. I'm not giving my... Y'all be careful. I don't approve of this. But you allow them to go. And you say, I don't understand why they've got in the trouble they've got in. We teach and we train our children by what we allow and by what we tolerate. Let's turn to Proverbs 12 and verse 26. We teach our children by the decisions that we make. Because we may not sit down and say to our children, you know what, here's something I want you to learn, children. I want y'all to learn that material things are far more important than spiritual things. We wouldn't teach them that, would we? We would never tell our children, you know what, school's more important now than, school's far more important, sports more important than God. We would never teach them that. You see, I never taught my children that. Oh, you were, well, man. Remember the horse rider? I never taught him to eat along the trail. Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. You sure did. You taught him that. Proverbs 12 and verse 26, if you will. Proverbs 12, 26. The righteous should choose his friends carefully. That's a decision. When we start making decisions about our time and our schedules as parents, you may be teaching your children about how important family is. You may be teaching your child by the decisions you've been making that, you know what, job and money is far more important than family. Then don't be surprised when you get older and they're supposed to be taking care of you, they're too busy for you. Don't be surprised at that. See, where did they learn it? You trained them. They're doing exactly what you taught them to do. We train our children in decisions we make about work. We train our children in decisions about where we'll live and where we'll worship. When we choose to move to a place where there's hardly a church or there's hardly any spiritual things going on, the church may be weak. What churches are there are filled with doctrinal error, but the money is good, it's a good job, it was a good promotion, and we raise our children in that environment, we just taught them something that we never wanted them to learn by the decisions that we make. We train our children in the decisions that we make about who they associate with. And we allow them to associate with people that we don't approve. We say, I don't like the friends that they've got. I just don't approve of that. But by the decisions that we're making, who we allow them to go with and where we allow them to be and how long we allow them to stay, we're teaching and we're training our children. Turn to Proverbs 22 and in verse 15. This is just a few verses down from that text of verse 6 we talked about earlier. Proverbs 22 and verse 6 talks about corrective discipline. Here's one of the ways that we train our children, by corrective discipline. The text says, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod will drive it far from him. You know what that text is saying? Children will misbehave. You know what that means? Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. You ever see parents who say, well, you know, children. Children will be children. Boys will be boys. That's just the way they are. Sure it is. Children will misbehave. I learned that from that text. Children will test the boundaries. When you say, here's the boundary, they're going to hit that fence to find out if the boundary is there. I was telling J.R. earlier about a dog I had that we had a radio fence. And that dog would go and test that boundary and make sure that fence is still on. And bounce back and, yeah, it's still on. Battery broke down, maybe go pack. We put a new battery in, he'd have to go test. Test that boundary. Children do that. You said, I can't go outside. Let's see if the boundary is there. Can I go outside? Children will be children. You read the rest of the proverb, but the rod will drive it far from you. You know what the rod is? Do your study on the word rod. It's not about a rod like you would think of. It's a shoot or a branch. We call it a switch. Take the switch to them. Spank the child. Remember the horse that kicked me? I mean, that horse kicked me, knocked me to the ground. I spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars at the doctor fixing my knee and my hip. I never took him to the vet to find out what happened to his leg, but it was tore up when I got through. Or I should say when my son got through with it. That horse never offered to kick again. It didn't hurt the horse. We have people who say, you ought not to hit a horse. Remember the whip for the horse? Proverbs 26. God thought you ought to whip them, and so I followed God's law. And I work with children. The rod will drive it far from him. And when you see that child misbehaving, you say, well, that's children. They just misbehave. Sure, they misbehave. But the rod will correct that. Yeah, that's a horse. He's just going to run away. Yeah, but you can stop that. He's going to take off when you try to get inside. Yeah, but you can stop that. And children are going to misbehave, but you can stop that. How do you train a child? By what you teach, by the example you set, by what you allow and what you tolerate, the decisions that you make, and by corrective discipline. Well, let's spend the rest of our time in application of those principles we just looked at from the Scriptures. And I've been telling you about differences before. Here's a horse that's a show horse worth 2.5 million plots. Here's one over here that you can buy for $200 or maybe give to you. And he's the same bloodline. What's the difference in training? What's the difference in children? Well, let's see what the difference is. Let's talk about a child that behaves. Here is a child that behaves. What we mean by that is this child does what he's told. This child stops when they're told to stop. This child quits when they're told to quit. And they come when they're called. You say, boy, I don't have a child like that. Man, that's not... I saw a parent that says, stop, and the child quits. And the parent says, stop that. And they quit that again. And when the parent says, come, the child comes running. You know what the difference is? It's all in the training. That's why that child does that. The parents train the child. That child wasn't born that way. The child learned that through training. But let's flip the coin now and look on the other side. Here's a child that's not controlled. You've all seen children like that. They don't do what they want. They pretty much get into anything and everything they want. They throw a tantrum when they don't get their way. The child has to be told and told and warned, and they're told to stop, and the child continues on. Told to stop, and the child continues on. And the child's told to stop, and they continue on. You know why they do that? The parent trained them that way. So no, they didn't. Yeah, they did. Because you know, last time when they said stop, the parent didn't mean stop, and the child learned they didn't mean stop. And the parent warned and threatened, and the child warned, they don't mean they're warning and threatening, and so consequently the child has been trained that way. That's why that child throws a tantrum, and that's why the child goes on and doesn't stop. That's the difference. It's in the training. Here's a child that's respectful. They respect those who are older. They say, yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, ma'am. And no, ma'am. They may address the older as Mr. J.R. or Mr. Bronger. Out of respect. They show they care about other people. You say, wow, that is impressive to see a child like that. You know what, child's like that? It all has to do with the training. That child didn't come in a gift box like that. That child was trained that way. The parents work, that takes a lot of time. On the other side, there's sometimes children that are disrespectful. Have you seen those? They disobey their parents. They treat olders as if they are peers. They're disrespectful to especially those who are adults. May even speak degrading to adults. You know why children behave that way? That's the way they've been trained. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. See, I never told my child to be disrespectful. Yeah, you did. Because you didn't correct it along the way. is like a horse. Here's a child that knows their Bible. This child is well versed in the Scriptures. They're a great Bible student. They know something about the United Kingdom versus the divided kingdom. And they know something about those kings in Israel and those kings in the south. They know something about Assyrian captivity and Babylonian captivity. And they know the difference in a pre-exile and an exile and a post-exile. They know that. They know their Scriptures. This is the kind of child that never misses a Bible class. They study and learn their lesson. This is the kind of child that is able to contribute to the Bible class because they know the Bible lesson. And if the lesson was in the book of Exodus, they've read that text and they can comment and tell you what the lesson is about tonight in the Bible class. You know why that child is that way? And you Bible class teachers, you know which students are that way. It's because they've been trained to be that way. It's not a reflection on the parent, on the child, it's a reflection on the parent. Here's a child that obeys the gospel. You say, my goal is I'd love to have a child that obeys the gospel. And this child is one who learns about the seriousness of life. And they've learned about following Christ. And they understand the need for seriousness in serving the Lord. And they are baptized of their own will rather than having to be forced by their parents. You know why they do that? It's because they've been trained that way. That's why that child is that way. So I would just love my child to grow up and to be one that understands by following Christ and they obey the gospel. I just love. They'll be that if you train them to be that. Train a child in the way that you go when he's old enough to depart from it. Is your goal to have a child that's diligent, that's faithful, that's conscientious, dedicated and devoted, and when they leave home, they remain faithful to the Lord? So when they go off to college, you don't wonder whether they're going to church. You know they're going to church. And when they move away and they move to another town, you know they're going to place membership and worship with faithful brethren. And when they get married and off on their own, you know they're going to have families that go to church and serve the Lord faithfully. You know why you have children like that? It's because they've been trained to be that way. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. The child that wants a godly family. Wouldn't you like for your children to grow up and want a godly family of their own and marry one who fears God? And may I suggest to you that just because one has been baptized and is a member of the church and goes to church all the time does not mean they fear God. Do you want a child that grows up and marries another who fears the Lord and trains their own children to fear the Lord? And there are children who do that. And some of you have children who have done that, and you say, wow, how did that happen? I'll tell you how that happened. They were trained to do that. What a child is and what a child does is all in the training. You want a child that's going to attend all the services, that doesn't miss for sports, that doesn't miss for every little ailment, that doesn't miss for work that could be rearranged. And their children, their teenagers, and when it comes to sports, they will never miss service for sports. When it comes to school, they'll never miss sports for a school event, band or anything else. And they don't miss any time. There's just a minor ailment that they might have. And when it comes to work, they work around the service of the Lord. And you know why they're children that way? Because their parents trained them to be that way. That's not a matter of luck. Those are not lucky parents. Those are hard-working parents. The man who has $2.5 million horse, he's not lucky. He's not lucky. He worked hard. He really worked hard at that. And those parents that have children that are like we're describing, they're not lucky. Don't turn around and say they're lucky. They're not lucky. They're well blessed, but they're not lucky. They've worked hard at having children to be what God would have them to be. And when you see a child that dresses respectfully, their clothes are not short. Their clothes are not tight. Their attire is not low cut. They show respectability by their attire and in their attitude. You know why they're that way? And I want to tell you that's impressive when you see young people and they come into services and they go out into public and they're dressed modestly and decently. And when I look at them, I think somebody trained them to do that. They didn't just decide on their own to do that. Somebody taught them the fear of the Lord.
a child is and what a child does
is all in the training. I didn't come here to talk to you about horses tonight. If you want to talk about horses, I'll talk for a while about horses, but you probably don't want to hear about horses. But I'm interested in training children. I have horses, but I'm more interested in my children. I'd rather talk to you about my children. And even more about my grandchildren, if you want to hear about something besides raising children. But I come to talk to you about raising children tonight. About how to train children and the difference in children. What have we learned? A horse, whether he's good or bad, is all because of the training. Children, good or bad, is all because of the training. What a horse is and what a horse does is all in the training. What your children are and what they do is all in the training. There may be one or more present tonight who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come all together? We stand and while we sing.